An historic voyage is coming up this July. Travel with Chuck Swindoll and your friends at Insight for Living Ministries on a cruise to Norway.
To accent our journey to this epic display of God's creation, we're inviting you to add a pre- or a post-extension to your Norway vacation. The young woman, Anne Frank, wrote in her personal diary during the Second World War, and little did Anne know how her emotion-filled writings would stir generations to come. I've read some of them, maybe you have. They're very moving. So come visit the Anne Frank House and Museum with us in Amsterdam.
Just one of the memories afforded you while on Insight for Living's cruise to Norway with Chuck and Cynthia Swindoll.
We'll have plenty of time to see the sights of Norway, and we'll enjoy refreshing moments of praise and worship too. Our theme for the week comes from Isaiah 61, verse 3, from brokenness to beauty.
You have lots of options for taking a vacation, but there's only one Insight for Living cruise to Norway. Call 888-447-0444 or online go to insight.org/Norway. July 26th to August 2nd, 2014, with optional pre- or post extensions. Call now, 888-447-0444 or visit insight.org/Norway.
The Insight for Living cruise to Norway is paid for and made possible by only those who choose to attend.
Welcome to Insight for Living. If you heard Chuck Swindoll's message yesterday, he used some fun imagery to describe the relationship between Christians. Chuck compared us to porcupines on a winter night. The cold drives us together in a tight huddle to keep warm. But as soon as we start touching, we begin jabbing one another with our sharp quills, scattering the huddle. And when it gets cold again, we move back in. And the sticking begins all over again. It's an endless religious dance. The truth is, we need each other, needles and all. Our topic is strengthening your grip on involvement.
As I study in my mind the involvements of a Christian, I think there are at least four that are intense in our lives on this earth. First, we are involved with God vertically. Of course, that's first. I am vertically related to God. I also, however, have three other relationships that are also intense, and they are all horizontal. Second, I'm involved with other members of my family. Third, I'm involved with other members of the family of God, not related by blood, but related by faith. And fourth, I am to be involved with people of this earth who have never met the Savior, the people of the world. Our attention in this message falls upon the third of those four relationships, and one that is often strained. Frequently, it is not characterized by an intense love of which Tertullian once spoke, or which we often sing as we talk about being one in the bond of love. First off, I'd like you to stop with me at Acts chapter 2, following that great, great sermon Peter preached on the day of Pentecost. There is the climax to the sermon where about 3,000 people respond positively to the claims of Christ. 3,000 souls that have never before that moment turned their lives over to Jesus Christ. 3,000 brand new believers. And Peter stands before them, no doubt as we would be, in his own human flesh, amazed and must have wondered, what do we do now? There was no building in which to meet. There was no completed Bible. There was no manual. There was no pastor. There was no organization called the church. There had never existed such a thing before. Suddenly he's standing with 3,000 brand new believers, and we are told in verse 42 what they spent their time doing. Now these are the outworkings of a local assembly. Last time we studied this subject, We thought about the internal priorities. You may remember them. A ministry is to be biblical. A ministry is to be characterized by authenticity. A ministry is to be gracious in its style. Ministry is to be relevant, always on the cutting edge of its time. But what about the outworkings of those things? Well, the early church devoted themselves, verse 42, to four things: to the apostles' teaching, to fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. Four things marked the early church. They gave attention to, they devoted themselves to teaching, good teaching, consistent teaching, continued teaching from day to day as the apostles fed them the good word of life. How important it was. They also had the ordinances of baptism, verse 41. The Lord's table was observed, verse 42. They had times of prayer. Verse 42 closes with that. It's the fellowship part that interests me. They didn't have 19 centuries to look back on of the development and cultivation and growth of a ministry. There was no such thing as the church, but they had fellowship. Koinonia, koinonia, the root word means common. You'll see it in verse 44. All those who believed were together and had all things in koinonia, in common. They shared in common things. Verse 45, they began selling the property of all things and possessions, and they were sharing them. They were koinonioing them. They were commoning them with one another, as anyone might have need. You say, well, that goes on for a while, but, you know, as the church grew and they began to spread and all, it finally left. No, it didn't leave. Chapter 4, verse 32, you'll see it's now larger in number. And yet it's still there, strangely. 4:32. The congregation of those who believed were one heart and soul. They were singing those great hymns. They were sharing in those experiences, if for no other reason than just basic survival. Not one of them claimed that anything belonging to him was his own. They had all things in common with one another. There was a common property that they shared in. If I read these passages correctly, I read that they all entered into them, that they were held together by them, that it was a genuine expression of love and harmony. That's koinonia. Expressions of authentic Christianity freely shared among members of the family of God. Maybe that was too fast. Expressions of authentic Christianity freely shared among members of the family of God. As I read my New Testament, I notice that koinonia, that same strange sounding word, is found no less than 20 times in the New Testament. Not once is it something that you do alone. It is invariably something done with someone else. In fact, as I categorize the events of that word, as I trace it through the New Testament, it means one of two things: sharing something with someone else or sharing in something with someone else. If I take this magazine article and I share it with you for the purpose of helping you, I have koinonioed. I have entered into a common interest and need. And as you enter into it with me, we have shared in that together. But it's something much deeper than the giving and receiving of an article out of a magazine. It's the giving and receiving of life, of emotions, of care and hurt and laughter and honor and grief and loss. Something I don't do alone. The involvement of Acts chapter 2 is described in chapter 12 of Romans rather vividly. Rather vividly. I invite you to turn to Romans 12. I want to answer the question, why? Why should I be involved? Why should I take the risk? Why should I open up my life and my concerns either to share or to listen in to someone else? Why? Verse 1, Paul is on his knees. I urge you, I plead with you, I beg of you, please, please listen to me, says the apostle. Verse 2, don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mold, is the paraphrase of Philip's New Testament. Don't be conformed to this world. Let me narrow it to one particular conformity, and that's isolation. Paul says, I beg of you, I plead with you, please listen to me. Don't let the world around you squeeze you into its mold of isolation. But be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove that the will of God is all it claims to be. The first reason I should be involved with people is that God commands it. He says in verse 9, let love be without hypocrisy. He says in verse 10, be devoted to one another in love. That's a command. That's a command to people that attend big churches or little churches who aren't even in churches but are in the family of God. A close friend of mine in the church told me of the August 1980 edition of Psychology Today. In it is a fabulous article entitled The Age of Indifference by Philip G. Zimbardo, prof of psychology at Stanford. The Age of Indifference. Accompanying the article is a street scene of two people walking past one another. The man is walking in this direction and the woman is walking in this direction. And do you think they're looking at each other? Not on your life. I'm going my way, he's going his way. Don't bother me. Don't take my time. Zimbardo, something of an expert on the subject of being shy, realizes that it isn't a result of being shy. He says, I believe that the basic quality of our social lives is being diluted, distorted, and demeaned by a host of profound structural changes in society. The consequences are serious. I know of no more potent killer than isolation. There is no more destructive influence on physical and mental health than the isolation of you from me and us from them. It has been shown to be a central agent in the etiology of depression, paranoia, schizophrenia, rape, suicide, mass murder, and a wide variety of diseases. Where do we witness displays of strong emotion anymore, except at sports events and rock concerts? Good question. And even when we witness them, how many of us will acknowledge as much or dare to share the emotion? On my way, he writes, on my way to visit my sister because she is dying of cancer, I explained the reason for my absence to student assistants. Have a nice trip, chortles one. See you when you get back, says another, and that's all they say. That's all they say. I expect that in the world system, because that's the mold in which the world has squeezed itself. That's the safe way to live. Hard, difficult, lonely, despairing as that may be, it's still the safest, because you reach out to a whirling, you might very well get ripped off, but it has come into the church. And the family of God is in the same category. We come together not as grapes, we come together as marbles. We make noise, we pour in by the hundreds, sounds come out of our mouths, but the closest we know of one another is the hairdo on the back of our head. I mean, a person is a little bit unusual to turn around directly and speak directly to you. I mean, after all, you're sitting behind them. We arrange it that way. We think at times, how can we get people acquainted? What a strange thing to say. But unless it is somehow put together almost in a contrived manner, it won't happen. You can come, sit, listen, and leave for months and never be impacted by one other life if you don't want to be. Used to be you could hide behind the columns or up in a balcony. We have neither columns nor balcony, but we can pull it off even here in front of everybody else. Just don't touch. I'm going to ask you, is that verse 10 of Romans 12 written in this age to this body of believers, not of Rome, but of Fullerton, or wherever city you may live in? He says, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor, not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit. Look at the spontaneity of it. The word means boiling. There's a boiling as you would boil water, a bubbling of spirit, rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. Wow. The New International Version says love must be sincere. The Living Bible says don't just pretend to love each other. Really love them. Philip says, let us have no imitation Christian love. You know what he's describing? A religious dance that porcupines are involved in. Which leads me to Romans 15, verse 7. Does God command it? Look at verse 7. I mean, really command it? Wherefore, command. Put it in your Bible. Command. Right there in the margin. Command from God. Accept one another. Well, I accept everybody here. I accept this person sitting next to me. I don't know his name, but I accept him. Wait a minute. Hold it. Can't let you off that way. To be true to the text, the original Greek word means to lay hold on. You want to do that now? No, not right now. Maybe a little later. To take to oneself. In fact, it is used extra biblically to describe what you do when you come to the door of your home and invite someone in. It's an invitation saying you are welcome. It's used in military outfits of making a person feel the esprit de corps of the military outfit. The new guy that comes in with the sea bag over his shoulder and he doesn't know his way around. It's the making him feel welcome and a part of it. It's a reaching out of acceptance. Without that, zero. There isn't involvement. God commands it, just as Christ accepted us to the glory of God. And aren't you glad when he did it, his arms were out and not behind his back? Does it seem significant to anybody else that on the cross Christ's arms are out and that the continued gesture you see of him in your mind's eye when you think of Christ, you never think of him with his arms folded. You always think of him with his arms out because that's where he found you in the streets. Stooping, lifting you up, holding you close, loving you through it. Never with hands in his robe's pockets. Never. And I frankly cannot, I do not mean to be cute in saying this, I can't imagine his greeting any one of us in heaven's glory with a handshake. I am confident it will be an embrace. Why do I get involved? Because God commands it. There's another reason. I close with it. It'll take a while, but I'll close with it. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Turn to 1 Corinthians 12. The second reason is the body needs it. The body needs it. I hear someone say, who hears that answer, the body needs it, I don't need it. I am a self-sufficient person. I was raised that way. I'm independent by nature. I'm an isolationist, actually. I didn't say you need it. I said the body needs it. The body needs it. You know who understands that? Is the wife, the mother who's hearing me right now, who fixes meals every day for a starving bunch of kids, and she doesn't need it. They need it. Unless I miss my guess, there are some others that are hearing me that are thinking, boy, that is right. Tell them about it. Boy, I'm not hungry half the time. And their favorite question is, when are we going to eat? And what are we going to have? And have you ever had this happen? You're eating lunch and they're talking about what are you going to have for supper? You ever had that happen? They're already telling you Thanksgiving meal. It's 4 days away and they're already planning the menu for you. When are we going to eat? When are we going to eat? You fix meals all the time because you need it? No way. No way. You fix it because your kids need it. The body needs it. Hey, you talk about self-sufficient. In my own strength, I'm the most self-sufficient person I've ever met. I'm as independent as a hog on ice, honest to Pete. I don't need people until I hurt. Then, oh, wow, I wonder where they are. But see, I cultivate them while I'm healthy. That doesn't come naturally. I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to us. We're in it together. And I hear some healthy, strong-willed, capable, and I might add, prosperous, financially successful businessmen and women thinking, who needs all that stuff, Chuck? Get onto the deep things of God. People around you need it, my friend. At times I need it. May I be bold enough to say, when a slat's come out from your bed, so will you. So will you. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 20. There are many members, but one body. Oh, I need that reminder. Self-sufficient people need that reminder. There are many people in the family of God, not just one. There's one body, but many people. Now the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Or again, the head to the feet, I have no need of you. We laugh about that verse, but there's more than just a little humor in it. No healthy body, if it could speak, on the part of the head, would say to the feet, I don't need you. No healthy eye would ever look at the hand and say, I don't need you. A hand is terribly tough. An eye is terribly tender. And I need tough and tender parts of my body to make it healthy, make it whole. I need the sensitivity of seeing on a face just a flicker of change that my hand never could see. But then my eye is at a loss to reach out unless I have a hand to reach and embrace. We need each other. On the contrary, verse 22, it is much truer that the members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. And those members of the body which we deem less honorable, on these we bestow more abundant honor. And our insignificant members come to have a more significance about them, whereas our significant members have no need of it. God has composed the body, giving more abundant honor to the member which lacked. Why does the body need it? Number one, to dispel division, verse 25, that there be no division. And number two, to cultivate compassion, verse 25, that the members should have the same care for one another. When you work your way through this text, you come to the purpose clauses of verse 25. The reason, the purpose behind God saying the body needs it is, number one, to dispel division, verse 25, that there should be no division. It's the whole idea of breaking down cliques, of mending wounds between members, of stopping the spread of diseases. You take away involvement in this ministry and I don't give it 5 years. 5 years and we'll be empty. We'll be shot through with divisions. Strong cliques, weak cliques, loud cliques, quiet cliques, bitter cliques, critical cliques. And we wonder, where's the body gone?
These cliques, these groupings, do nothing more than create divisions among us. And this passage tells us to care for one another. You're listening to Insight for Living and a message from Chuck Swindoll titled, Strengthening Your Grip on Involvement. Today's sermon is just one of 16 in the comprehensive topical study called Strengthening Your Grip. And you can purchase the CDs or download the audio files by going to insightworld.org. While you're online, you can also access the convenient mobile app at insight.org/app. Paul and several of the New Testament writers often wrote about the importance of relationships. They told us to accept one another, forgive one another, and encourage one another. Well, Insight for Living has an excellent resource completely focused on helping you move forward in this regard. It's called Love One Another, 20 Practical Lessons. This book is perfectly suited for private personal study, but it's also a great way to ignite conversation among friends in a small group Bible study or Sunday school class. And here's how to receive a copy. When you give a donation of any amount, simply call or go online and request the book Love One Another. If you're listening in the United States, call right now, 1-800-772-8888, or go online to insight.org. There's not a day that passes when we don't hear dramatic stories from listeners who make life-changing decisions because of the biblical truth they've heard on Insight for Living. So your donations are making an impact. Your gift not only ensures that Chuck's teaching continues right here, but a portion of your gift is used to bring Chuck's teaching to remote parts of the world as well, many times in their own language. So when you give, be sure to request the practical book, Love One Another. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org. Tomorrow, Chuck Swindoll begins celebrating Easter with a message titled, When the Presence of Hope Arose. That's Wednesday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Strengthening Your Grip on Involvement, was copyrighted in 1980, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2014 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.